The presidential motorcade had just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas and was circling through the fringes of the business district when three shots suddenly rang out.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
Everything starts with a Trump tweet. Every single time, it always starts with a Trump tweet. And whether he's sitting on the golden throne that he's installed in the White House, taking the Cleveland Browns to the Super Bowl, and maybe he's just on a stream of consciousness rant, it all starts with a Trump tweet. And sometimes I think he does this on purpose to attack the media, to get them spun up. And then we get the craziness that we get for the entire week. And it blows by and the week feels like a freaking year when it's only been 5 days. And the news cycle has spun so quickly that it's washed more clothes than every Holiday Inn combined in less than a week. And what we see is we get crazy incidents like what happened with the Florida representative over the Gold Star death, you know, the death of the military Green Berets over there in Niger. And we get this crazy circus between some lady who looks like Muttley from the Hanna-Barbera comics, you know, the dog that always did the mixed with Macho Man Randy Savage. I mean, she raided his wardrobe, I guess, at the estate sale after he passed away. And she has a different colored hat and matching suit jacket for every occasion. And the thing is, we see this happen down the line every week. And over the weekend, we got this one tweet that said, "Officials behind the now discredited dossier plead the fifth. Justice Department and FBI should immediately release who paid for it." Well, guess who runs that department there, big guy? You do. You run the executive branch. Now, when we get into, can you fire everybody in the executive branch? I mean, everybody's going, oh, the deep state's got Trump on lockdown and the Obama holdovers. Why are there holdovers in general? Why doesn't he go in there and just pink slip them all? Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution states that by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, the president can appoint judges, ambassadors, and executive officials, but Constitution does not say anything as to whether or not he can fire these appointees. But during the first Congress, James Madison, of course, yet again, one of my favorite founders. I mean, Ben Franklin would be easy to go with because of his sharp wit and his humor, but James Madison just was, he understood it all. And he argued that without the power to dismiss executive officials, the president would be rendered impotent. In the 1789 law establishing the Department of State, Madison inserted language that granted the president unqualified power to fire the Secretary of State, who at the time was Madison's ally, Thomas Jefferson. This provided the first statutory legitimization of the presidential's power to remove officers. Though Senator Henry Clay tried unsuccessfully to curb Andrew Jackson's removal power some 30 years later, it wasn't until after the Civil War did Congress revisit the decision of 1789. In 1876, Congress enacted the Tenure of Office Act over President Johnson's veto. The act required the president to secure the Senate's approval to remove any officials from government whose nomination had been confirmed by the Senate. When Johnson tested the act by unilaterally firing Secretary of War Edwin Stanton, Congress promptly initiated impeachment proceedings. The House voted 126-47 in favor of impeachment. The Senate, however, failed by just one vote. 2 decades later, the Congress repealed the Tenure of Office Act. But we know that if you're the chief executive and you're running the DOJ, why are we doing nothing about this? I mean, the dossier, if we want to get back to that, think about what the dossier or who was involved with the dossier. Remember the meeting that we talked about with Natalia Veselnitskaya, the Russian lawyer who was over here to fight the Magnitsky Act, you know, the whole Russian adoption thing? Well, she has some backstories that we covered on a few shows back a couple months ago. Go back and listen to them on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Spreaker. And we covered the fact that this Russian attorney had ties to John Podesta, had ties to Bill Clinton. And this random meeting they had with Paul Manafort and Don Jr., everybody looked at it like, oh, look, Donald Trump is colluding with the Russians. No, not really. What he was doing was he took a meeting to get, you know, the information that Natalia Veselnitskaya was peddling, you know, because she wanted to see if the Trump administration was going to step up and do whatever she wanted on the Russian adoption thing over the sanctions that were imposed by Obama. But see, here's the problem. She also was a part of Fusion GPS who made the dossier. She also has on her client list Sberbank, the bank who dealt with the financial portion of the Uranium One deal. The bank that also paid the $500,000 to Bill Clinton for his speaking engagement in front of those involved with the Rosatom deal. And we're going to get into that in a little bit because more documentation has been uncovered. The FBI has confirmed a lot of this. But what we have to look at is this kind of craziness is what led us to voting for President Trump. Not me, of course. I didn't vote for him. But the majority of people out there who did vote for him went that route because they were tired of the corruption of Hillary Clinton getting email servers in bathrooms with classified material on it that was ripped open. You know, they stripped it of its classified markings, and then they took the State Department communication devices and beat them to, you know, dust with hammers and stuff. I mean, that kind of corruption has led everybody to be completely incensed at our government that they would turn around and pick somebody like Donald Trump. The problem here is the religious right decided to not trust in God and were more afraid of name ID, celebrity name ID being what gets somebody across the finish line, like Hillary Clinton. Like they would see, oh, I don't know this, you know, Ted Cruz, or I don't know this Rand Paul or Scott Walker, but Clinton, oh, let me click the lever for her. They were so afraid of that that they jumped on Donald Trump as soon as he came out the gate. And, you know, everybody's, oh, he's a baby Christian. And I don't know, I saw some articles recently where he was ripping on Pence and his stance on gay marriage and his stance on abortion. And he's just ripping them apart and saying things that even a baby Christian wouldn't say. But at the end of the day, we continue to have this circus. Trump tweets, we've got all the corruption on the left. And remember what I said online, a lot of people took this to heart. Whatever the left is actively doing, that is what they accuse the right of doing. They paint the right as the villain of conducting these nefarious acts while they actually engage in them. So they spend all this time going, oh, Trump and Russia. And we talked about how Trump has Russian business deals. I mean, heck, he had a freaking, you know, beauty contest run out of Russia, you know, or with Russian involvement. I mean, so it's not a stretch to say he doesn't have people that he knows in business circles from Russia. But whether or not that was collusion, the real collusion was making deals with Vladimir Putin. The real collusion was Bill Clinton flying over to speak to Vladimir Putin to use the State Department that his wife ran to make deals like selling Uranium One to Rosatom. That's the real collusion. And so that corruption led people to be so disaffected by government that they wanted somebody who they thought was an outsider in, and they glommed on to the cult of personality that is Donald Trump. The problem is, we need to start looking at the Constitution as the candidate. Look to the candidates as only those who are going to carry it by we the people's demands. The idolatry of man is dangerous. It clouds your vision. It causes you to make exceptions for stances you wouldn't normally accept. There's people out there that explain away everything that Donald Trump does. There's people that explain away everything that Hillary Clinton does because they're fixated on the person. They go, oh, well, he didn't mean that. Or well, you just don't understand. He's the kind of person, and they make all these explanations and they explain things away and they make excuses for things that they normally wouldn't do when they see it from the opposition standpoint. But once you fix your eyes on principles, values, you humble yourself, you deflate your ego, you get down to acknowledging natural rights. I like to think of that as God, the creator. But you don't have to think of it as that. You can think of it as take a look at nature itself and that there is a freedom that exists. There is a governing principle with animal nature and just, you know, it's out there and it's untouched by man. And once we realize that's what gives us freedom and that we have to basically meet the needs of what a governing body should meet on a very limited basis and not step on those natural rights, your perspective changes. It's then when you recognize the frauds, the opportunists, those out there selling you lies for personal gains, those out there hustling all these deals, saying one thing one minute, doing something on the next. It's also when you can have a discussion with those who have opposing viewpoints, opposing positions, but are curious because they have their heart opened. And we need to start doing that. Many of us need to start getting on that page because, I mean, what is government right now? I mean, we're running it by judges. I mean, judges and generals run the show. I mean, Donald Trump's out there golfing. You know, he may meet with some people from time to time. You know, who knows? But at the same time, it looks as though it can run on autopilot. I mean, it makes no sense to me that we're not doing what we should be doing to clean house, and that the person that we elected is always acting like an outsider still. And Obama did that. Maybe there was some truth to it. I mean, maybe he was an outsider and he just happened to be running the presidency and he's out golfing all the time. Seems to be something that happens continually on both sides. I mean, Trump complains about the FBI and the dossier, but it's his branch of government that could do something about it. So are we being played? I mean, is America essentially Egypt? Generals run the show, same foreign policy, but bipartisan explosions of glee when Trump decides to bomb an Assad Air Force runway. I mean, everybody from John McCain to John Bolton to Hillary Clinton, all cheering, Marco Rubio, all cheering and saying the same thing. That is the only time where I've ever seen bipartisan support. I mean, do presidents just play golf all day? Meet with foreign leaders? Do State of the Union addresses? Is the Leviathan government moves in the same direction? I mean, Hillary's not being locked up. I mean, that seems like it was advantageous for her to have Donald Trump become the GOP nominee because he was a former donor. I mean, and it would seem that it would be advantageous to Vladimir Putin to have Hillary Clinton as president because of the uranium deal, because she would have disengaged in Middle Eastern involvement. She would have had troops dilly-dallying over there, but ultimately Putin would run in there and just do whatever he wants as he's doing now. I mean, everything makes zero sense unless we're in the middle of the biggest distraction of all. Status quo goes on. The arguments go on. People in multicolored cowboy hats and suits beclown themselves on TV. Gold Star generals have to come out there and bring back some sort of, you know, sense of normalcy and demeanor. And it all goes back to Trump tweeting again. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
All right, remember, what is that rule that I always say that applies to the left? Whatever the left is accusing its opposition of doing, it actively engages in it. So, you know, gone is this large story about Trump and Russia and collusion and all this stuff because Obama administration approved Moscow control of 1/5 of America's uranium in 2010. FBI gathered substantial evidence that Russian nuclear industry officials were engaged in bribery, kickbacks, extortion, money laundering. And we covered this a few months ago on our Whataboutism episode, because in me discussing this, some out there accused me of whataboutism. And I'm like, no, this is real. This is real stuff. This is the sale of national security to benefit those on the left. I mean, it's amazing. Federal agents used a confidential U.S. witness working inside the Russian nuclear industry to gather financial records, secret recordings, intercept emails all the way back in 2009. Eyewitness accounts indicating Russian nuclear officials routed millions of dollars to the U.S. designed to benefit the Clinton Global Initiative. This is from The Hill. So this isn't some right-wing, you know, gateway pundit Breitbart hit piece. During Hillary Clinton's time as Secretary of State, she was involved in this. She showed Moscow compromised and American uranium trucking firm with bribes and kickbacks in violation of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Department of Justice continued investigating the matter for more than 4 years after its initial start in 2010. The Obama administration knew the Russians were engaged in bribery, kickbacks, and extortion in order to gain control of these resources. And yet, they still okayed the deal. Obama administration was anxious to reset Russia-U.S. relations, so they kept it all under wraps, refusing to tell even top congressional intelligence figures. And in 2014, the Obamaites filed low-level criminal charges against a single individual over what the FBI found. And they didn't even put this out there in much of the public. Quote, the Russians were compromising American contractors in the nuclear industry with kickbacks and extortion threats, all of which raised legitimate national security concerns, one veteran told The Hill. Until September 2013, the FBI director was Robert Mueller. And, you know, he's the one that's on the special counsel probing the Russian meddling in the 2016 election. And he's going to bring up some stuff that's pretty interesting, too. But let's see who benefited out of this. Well, there was gifts of $145 million to the Clinton Foundation, a $500,000 speaking fee for a single speech from Bill Clinton by individuals involved in a deal that required Hillary Clinton's approval. FBI even flagged the routing of millions from Russian nuclear officials to cutouts and on to Clinton Incorporated, leaving America and the public and Congress all in the dark. While Obama administration made two major decisions benefiting Putin's commercial ambitions, the first being October 2010, the State Department government agencies on Committee on Foreign Investments in the United States unanimously approved the partial sale of Canadian mining company Uranium One, who had control over a lot of the uranium sources here in America. And they allowed this transaction to be to occur in benefits to Rosatom, the Russian uranium company. And then the second issue at hand was the Obama administration gave approval for Rosatom's Tenex subsidiary to sell uranium to U.S. nuclear power plants, a significant move as it was allowed Tenex to expand its sales, which were heavily restricted under the Megatons to Megawatts Peace Program from the 1990s. The FBI, Energy Department, and court documents reviewed by The Hill show the FBI, in fact, had gathered substantial evidence. Well before the committee's decision that Vadim Mirkin, the main Russian overseeing Putin's nuclear expansion inside the United States, was engaged in wrongdoing starting in 2009. Then Attorney General Eric Holder was among the Obama administration officials joining Hillary Clinton on the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States at the time Uranium One deal was approved. Multiple current and former government officials told The Hill that they did not know whether the FBI or the DOJ ever alerted committee members to the criminal activity they uncovered. But then we learned that the GOP actually blocked the investigation. From Fox News, the House Oversight Committee has started its investigation into an Obama-era deal with Russian-backed companies who bought uranium firms with mines in the U.S. Representative Ron DeSantis told Fox News, adding that he had spoken with the federal government's confidential informant on the matter. He said, I've spoken with the confidential informant that helped the FBI uncover this bribery scheme. But then he goes on to say, clearly, it's in the public's interest that this individual be able to tell his story to Congress. DeSantis said the informant to whom he spoke to signed the original non-disclosure deal with Obama administration Attorney General Eric Holder and was threatened with reprisal by the Justice Department under Attorney General Loretta Lynch. And Loretta Lynch comes into the picture in a little bit, but going on when he tried to come forward in 2016. But at the end of the interview, DeSantis said something that was pretty interesting. The GOP leadership blocked DeSantis from investigating evidence from the Clinton uranium deal. Which, I mean, right there, we are in the party of one. The Democrats, the Republicans, they're all on the same side. And they're not in it for the interest of the American people. And beyond that, they're not going to change. We're not going to have those great people that we want coming into power with integrity. I mean, look what happened to Austin Peterson last week. What in the world? The guy just burned all his integrity to the ground just so he could shill for the GOP side. So we're basically looking at the fact that A convention of states is the only thing that's going to clear up anything these days. Now, this informant, it looks to be that Attorney General Jeff Sessions could lift the gag order to help investigate this bribery and money laundering scheme involving uranium and national security. According to the informant's attorney, Victor Tonsing, founding partner of the law firm of DeGeneva and Tonsing in Washington, D.C., as the case wound down, FBI directed the informant to sign a non-disclosure agreement, which prohibited him from speaking to members of Congress about it. And special counsel Robert Mueller was the FBI director during the bulk of the investigation. James Comey became the director in 2013. But according to Tonsing, the Department of Justice under the Obama administration told the informant that if he violated the NDA, he would lose his liberty. She further said the Obama administration did not comply with the FOIA request from my client's previous attorney, and the FBI did not give him a copy of the non-disclosure agreement when he signed it. So we know that there's something going on there if they're going to sit there and crucify this guy and put his liberty at trial. His freaking liberty. I mean, that's what we're dealing with these people. Now, one of the things we have to look into is the fact that there's an investigation going on that Robert Mueller is involved with that kind of falls into this whole situation. Tony Podesta and the Podesta Group, they're now subjects of a federal investigation being held by special counsel Robert Mueller. And this is from NBC News. The probe of Podesta and his Democrat-leaning lobbying firm grew out of Mueller's inquiry into finances of the former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort. As special counsel, Mueller has been tasked with investigating possible collusion. We got that. Okay, but moving forward, Manafort had organized a public relations campaign for a nonprofit called European Center for Modern Ukraine, or ECMU. Podesta's company was one of many firms that worked on the campaign, and sources said that the investigation into Podesta and his company began more as a fact-finding mission about the ECMU and Manafort's role, but it's now morphed into whether or not they violated the Foreign Agents Registration Act. Under the FARA, the Federal Agents Registration Act, people who lobby on behalf of foreign governments, leaders, or political parties must file detailed disclosures about their spending activities with the Justice Department. Willful failure to file these forms is a felony and can result at least up to 5 years in prison if the prosecutions are, you know, sought to be legitimate. But what really comes into play is the Podesta Group itself. Because this, from Forbes magazine, the media's focus on Donald Trump's Russian connections ignores the much more extensive, lucrative business relationship of top Democrats with Kremlin-associated oligarchs and companies, thanks to the Panama Papers. And we talked about this on our Whataboutism special. We know that the Podesta Group, founded by John Podesta's brother Tony, lobbied for Russia's largest bank, Sberbank. Sberbank is the Kremlin. They don't do anything without Putin's go-ahead. And they don't tell him no either, explained a retired U.S. Senate intelligence official. According to Reuters, Tony Podesta was among the high-profile lobbyists registered to represent organizations backing Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych. Among these was the European Center, which paid Podesta $900,000 for his lobbying. And that's not all. The busy Podesta Group represented Uranium One, a uranium company acquired by the Russian government, which reached approval and received approval by Hillary Clinton's State Department. There you go. The New York Times reported that Uranium One's chairman, Frank Juista, made significant donations to the Clinton Foundation, and Bill Clinton was paid $500,000 for a speech, as the story goes. But what's even crazier is Sberbank, the bank that handled all this that Podesta was, you know, lobbying for. From Business Insider, according to William Browder from Hermitage, Natalia Vesiniskaya, one of her clients, includes Sberbank. They were named as defendant in the lawsuit in a New York federal court over the dispute about the takeover of a Russian granite company. In March, Sberbank appointed Mark E. Kasowitz to represent it, and he was President Trump's personal lawyer. So it just goes round and round. From The Hill, the Homeland Security Department confirmed that Russian lawyer Natalia Vesiniskaya was granted special entry into the United States on multiple occasions in 2015 and 2016 at the request of the Justice Department. Homeland Security told The Hill that Vesiniskaya was allowed to enter the United States on multiple occasions between 2015 and 2016 under a significant public benefit role. And not only that, who greenlit her visa, which she should have never had? Loretta Lynch. And that's where she comes into play. So the whole thing stinks of Clinton corruption, where the Clintons basically funneled all this money through their foundation from the Russians, sold uranium. Heck, there's even a story about how they received money for the sale of F-16s and fighter jets to the Saudi Arabian government. Qatar paid them money too. So this goes deep. And my theory has always been that Hillary Clinton did such a lackluster performance on purpose as far as campaigning. I mean, she barely spoke. She didn't go to Wisconsin. She was falling down all over the place on video. My thing is, had she been elected, she would have been impeached on treason or impeached over these nefarious deals that they profited off of on the backs of U.S. national security. So it would have been a beneficial thing for her. It would have been advantageous to her to lose. And she goes, oh, well, I tried. Sorry, guys. I can't return favors, Qatar. I can't return favors, Putin. I can't return favors, Saudi Arabia. I can't return favors to all of these foreign entities and government officials because I don't have the power anymore. Guess I'm going to have to work on the outside. Sorry about your luck. And Donald Trump rolls through and the media decides to turn the focus of Russia on him. So what we really need to get into is the story that The Hill reported on about how Russia has engaged in spying and was trying to get into the State Department under Hillary Clinton from multiple angles. And we'll do that on the other side of the break.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
So as Trump collusion with the Russians dissipates, even though every time something with Hillary Clinton and Uranium One and the Ross Adam deal comes into play, they always throw a little bone out there to, you know, nod back to this Trump collusion story that was all fabricated with, you know, they'll bring up, oh, Carter Page is going to go up before, you know, the council or what have you. We have to look at the fact that the Russians were looking to invade and infiltrate every part of our political system. I mean, that's no surprise. They did that going all the way back. I mean, Dr. Paul Kengor, get his book Dupes. It gives, using KGB documentation, full accounting of decades and decades of KGB and Soviet Union influence or attempted influence on American politics, mostly with the left, but there are some on the right that were infiltrated as well. And so apparently, as Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State and as they were gearing up to, you know, launder money through the Clinton Global Initiative and make themselves a boatload of money off of American national security, Vladimir Putin and his machine started to unleash an influence campaign of spies designed to win access to the new Secretary of State and Bill Clinton and members of their inner circle. And this is according to interviews and once sealed FBI documents that The Hill reported upon. From The Hill, some of the activities FBI agents gathered evidence about in 2009 and 2010 were covert and illegal. A female Russian spy posing as an American accountant, for instance, used a false identity to burrow her way into the employ of a new major Democratic donor in hopes of gaining intelligence on Hillary Clinton's departments, records show. The spy was arrested and deported as she moved closer to getting inside the secretary's department, agents said. Agents were surprised by the timing and size of a $500,000 check that a Kremlin-linked bank, Sberbank, you remember that, and Renaissance, I can't remember the full name off the top of my head, but which was provided to Bill Clinton for a single speech in the summer of 2010. That payday came just weeks after Hillary Clinton helped arrange for American executives to travel to Moscow to support Putin's efforts to build his own country's version of Silicon Valley. If you remember, we talked about that a while back. That source pointed to an October 2009 communication intercepted by the FBI in which Russian handlers instructed two of their spies specifically to gather non-public information from the State Department. Quote, send more info on current international affairs vital for our highlight U.S. approach. Part of the message to the spies read using the country's first initial to refer to Russia. Quote, try to single out tidbits unknown publicly, but revealed in private by sources closer to State Department, government, major think tanks. Frank Figliuzzi, the former FBI assistant director for counterintelligence, supervised the post-arrest declassification and release of records from a 10-year operation that unmasked a major Russian spy ring in 2010. It was one of the most important U.S. counterintelligence victories against Russia in history and famous for nabbing the glamorous spy turned model Anna Chapman, another Russian woman posing as a mundane New Jersey accountant named Cynthia Murphy, was closing in on accessing Secretary Clinton's department, according to records and interviews. For most of the 10 years, the Russian spies that included Chapman and Murray acted as sleeper cells, spending a great deal of time collecting information and passing on to their handlers inside Russia's SVR spy agency, the FBI stated. Murphy, living with her husband and kids in New Jersey suburbs of New York City, reported a major breakthrough in February of 2009 in an electronic message sent to her handlers. She had scored access to a major Democrat FBI record state. Multiple current and former officials confirmed to The Hill that the cabinet officer was Hillary Clinton. The fundraiser was New York financier Alan Petrikoff, and the political party was the Democrat National Committee. None of the Americans were ever suspected of illegalities, but the episode made it clear that Russian spies were stepping up their operations against the new administration after years of working in a sleeper capacity. In 2010, Petrikoff told the Washington Post, after the spy case broke, he believed that he had been a victim of a spy ring, saying Murphy had worked for him, but that he only talked about accounting and no government or politics with her. Yeah, we can believe that. Back in 2010, when the spy story broke, Hillary Clinton's office issued a statement that there was no reason to think the secretary was target of this spy ring. Yeah, there's no reason to think that. You know, we didn't have a unsecured server hanging out in the bathroom next to a toilet, you know. You flush it twice to make sure that the security system is working on the IT side. You know, with all the documentation that was flowing through, all the emails that were classified, that the masking and the markings of classification were pulled off of there. Nah, that wouldn't have been prime and useful to a spy agency, especially from Russia. But back to the story. A day after the arrest of the sleeper ring, another event captured the FBI's attention. Thousands of miles away in Russia, former President Clinton collected $500,000 for giving a 90-minute speech to Renaissance Capital, a Kremlin-connected bank, and then scored a meeting with Vladimir Putin himself. The check caught the attention of FBI agents, especially with Hillary Clinton having recently returned from meetings in Russia and her department working on a variety of issues where Moscow had interest. One issue was American approval of the Russian nuclear company Rosatom's purchase of the Canadian company called Uranium One, which controlled 20% of America's strategic uranium reserves, which we've been talking about this entire show. The second issue was the 10X Russian company, which was an arm of Uranium One, to score new raft of commercial nuclear sales to U.S. companies. 10X for years was selling uranium recycled from the old Soviet warheads to the United States, but that deal was coming to an end and it needed a new U.S. market. And the third was a promise Secretary Clinton herself made to Russian leaders to round up support in America's Silicon Valley for the then Russian President Dmitry Medvedev's dream for a new high-tech hub outside Moscow known as Skolkovo. And we talked about that on one of our other shows. A team of venture capitalists had been dispatched to Moscow just a few weeks before Bill Clinton landed his payday, records showed. We have 40,000 Russians living in Silicon Valley in California. We would be thrilled if 40,000 Russians were working in whatever Russian equivalent of Silicon Valley is, providing global economic competition, taking the internet and technology to the next level, Hillary said at the time. According to a State Department transcript, she added that the business executives she dispatched to Putin's homeland had Twittered their way through through Russia. So we know that there's an interest for Russia to take us on the tech level that Hillary Clinton was trying to facilitate. Not only that, she was enriching herself off the backs of our uranium, and Bill Clinton was basically being the one putting it in motion. And on top of that, they were doing this at a time when a major Russian spy ring was trying to infiltrate Hillary Clinton. I mean, it's amazing that all of this is supposed to go on and we should not be concerned about unsecured servers, personal use, unsecured devices by the State Department officials with classified information. I mean, all this is crazy. But then to turn around and say, well, you know, Trump had a meeting with a Russian lawyer who worked for the Podesta Group, who worked for Fusion GPS, who worked for Spur Bank and in Renaissance Capital, who basically made the payment to Bill and Hillary Clinton for the Global Initiative and for his speech. I mean, it all stinks from the Democrat side. And now we're learning that the Clinton campaign and the DNC paid for the Fusion GPS dossier. In fact, an unknown anti-Trump Republican donor during the primaries, McCain, began the funding, to which the DNC and the Clinton campaign picked up the tab and finished it up after the anti-Republican found no other use for it to smear Donald Trump. And what of the FBI's role in all of this? And this isn't to prop up Trump, because I'm sure they were trying to dupe him too. But this is to say, stop focusing this year-long investigation on dead ends there when you've got a full plethora. You've got a buffet of corruption on the left. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Welcome back. I think everybody needs to take a moment and go to see Peter Schweitzer's documentary or even the book, Clinton Cash. I think it's on YouTube. You can see what the Clinton Foundation did with Haiti. You can also see what, in the book at least, what happened from the perspective of all of these Uranium One issues, because he kind of covered a lot of this early on. But there was also an issue back in 2015 where the Clinton Foundation cashed in on Sweden. And as Sweden lobbied Hillary to sidestep Iran-related sanctions. I mean, there is no end to the corruption with these guys. I mean, this was documented in the Washington Times back in June 2nd of 2015. Bill Clinton's foundation set up a fundraising arm in Sweden that collected $26 million in donations at the same time that that country was lobbying Hillary Rodham Clinton's State Department to forego sanctions that threatened its thriving business with Iran. I mean, it almost makes you wonder, is the Iran nuclear deal that Obama was so passionate for, did that have anything to do with the Clinton Global Initiative? I mean, it would not surprise me if down the road we got some sort of document dump out of the blue on a Friday evening that said, hey, guess what? You know what happened? Yeah, Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton had something to do with the Iran nuclear deal, and they made a buttload of money off of it. I mean, the level of corruption makes no sense to me. But the fact that Robert Mueller, the fact that Rosenstein, who is the, I think he's the assistant FBI director, the fact that these people were working in the Obama administration while all this was going on, but they're also in the Trump administration, makes me wonder, are we being played? Goes back to my original statement. Are we being played? Is Trump put there just so that the Clintons can get out scot-free, so that Obama could get out scot-free, so that he is the straw man that the left can beat up on, you know, social media, in the news, at award shows. They can get mad. I mean, Kathy Griffin's holding his bloody head up right after a few years earlier. She's pictured hanging out with him on a golf course, yucking it up. I mean, it makes no sense to me how all of this rage towards this one individual who was once friends with all these people, once their donor, how he is suddenly the fall guy for everything. But he's also the one that props up all of these media tweaks. You know, he's the one that win the phone call with the, over the Gold Star Green Berets in Niger. When that should have just died out as a stupid story, he tweets to keep the embers burning, and it stays in the news for a week and a half. So I don't know. I mean, that's all speculation. I've got no way to prove any of that. But it just seems odd to me that he hasn't cleaned out his office, and he has actually put people in there that Obama had, and we're now dealing with the same craziness. But yet we also are allowing the corruption that is 100-fold on the other side go untouched. But at least as of today, House Republicans are launching an investigation into Russia and the Obama uranium deal based on Devin Nunes and his news conference, based on what I've just read in CNN Politics not too long ago. I mean, you know, it is an apple. It's not a banana, CNN. We're really going to take this to the investigative level, as we should. So I don't know if anything's going to come out of this. Like I said earlier in the show, GOP majority blocked a lot of what was going through as far as investigations in the past. So who knows? For all I care, we need a convention of states to fix the swamp. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. You can listen to me on Talk America Radio. We're on every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Liberty Channel. We air again on Saturdays, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Liberty Channel. Catch us on the Justice Channel on Talk America Radio, 7 p.m. on Saturdays and 8 a.m. Sunday mornings Eastern Standard Time. You can also check out the podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Spreaker. Get the free Adrian Slade Show Roku channel in your streaming store. It's available, and it has the last 10 most recent shows available for streaming. Donate to the program, patreon.com/Adrian Slade Show. You're going to get advanced screenings of the show before anyone else, and you're also going to get extras. And it's $2 a month. All you got to do is donate $2 a month, and you're going to be a part of the Slade Brigade. We'll see you guys next time. Thanks for tuning in.